Hello and welcome to our monthly interview for Leaning Into Light. We're so grateful to have you here. And this month, for the month of June 2019, our topic is loving kids through school. I am Jessica Rios, the founder of Leaning Into Light, and these free monthly recordings, these interviews, are here to support you, our listeners, to lean into light. What does that mean? Leaning into light means choosing to recover from pain, from fear, from loneliness, from so many of the yucky feeling things that we go through as humans, and recovering to feeling good, to feeling love, to feeling joy, all those things, leaning into light. So please grab a pen. You can pause the recording if you need to, grab some paper so you can take notes if anything in this conversation appeals to you and wants to go into your life. Welcome to our guest for today, Kristen Walter.
Hello. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, nice to be with you too. Kristen Walter is, she has worked in the formal and informal education space for 15 years. Kristen, you co-founded the nonprofit organization Feel Good. You're co-founder of Crew 2030. Kristen serves on the board of the Pachamama Alliance, and she's a mother of three children. And she is very committed to a world that works for all of life. So I'll share now a website where you can get in touch with Kristen. It's just www.crew2030.org, crew, C-R-E-W, 2030.org. And I'll start off this conversation by sharing a little story about how Kristen and I met and why I wanted to interview her, why I wanted to interview you. So Kristen, you and I both have daughters who are 6 and 8 years old, right? Your oldest is 7 and a half. Okay. And they were in a class together, a capoeira class, Brazilian martial art. And the second I looked at you, I had this, this kind of wash of like powerful light, really, this powerful, strong sort of radiance came through you. And I, being a person who's very affectionate with my words, immediately turned to you and said something. And you, something loving about how I experienced you. And you responded so beautifully with a way of receiving that was, there was nothing in you that was like, oh, well, thanks. Oh, I'm having a tough day. So that was, it was just pure receiving. And it was so powerful. And since then, less than a year ago, we've been dear friends, and you just have such a beautiful presence. So that's why.
Thank you, Jessica.
You're welcome. So that's why we're here. And the conversation we're having today is, let's share just a few words about this. So I, some of you listeners may know, homeschool my daughter, and I'm really passionate about homeschooling and unschooling. And Kristen is one of my dearest friends and people. You have your kids in school. And some of what I've heard from you about your kids being in school is, in my world anyway, it's just rare. It's rare insight. And I think it's something that can be so valuable for moms who do have their kids in school and maybe have never thought of a piece of what you share. So this conversation is in service to mothers and fathers and families who are going the school route and want to make the most of it. So that's where we're coming from. Mm-hmm. So to dive in, what, Kristen, made you and your husband choose school for your children?
So that's an interesting question. And actually, can I back up?
Please.
Because did you say the title was Loving Kids Through School?
Yeah.
So originally I thought the title was Loving Your Kids Through School. Uh-huh. But you said loving kids through school, and that resonated with me much more than loving your kids through school.
Wonderful.
And why? I feel like that really connects to why we chose school. It's a part of participating in community and society in a way. We have opportunity everywhere we turn. We're very privileged people. And I think the privilege, I don't know, we can forget who we are through it all. Mm-hmm. And school is an environment, it's a community, it's a format, it's a part of society that, public school specifically, that we we look at it as a privilege to participate in order to really deepen our engagement in the here and now of the time we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, you know, that wider lens for school has always been, I would say, kind of our starting point. I think we've always assumed that, you know, we're loving, conscious parents, and we can meet their needs. Like, I think we're very confident in our ability to meet the needs of our children,
mm-hmm.
their inner needs, their outer needs, their, all of their needs, their creative needs.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's, you know, and we're aware of, is it being met at school? If not, here's how we're going to meet it at home.
Mm-hmm.
If not being met at home, here's how we're going to meet with grandparents. Here's how, right, through this program. And so we've really looked at their whole child development as it's a part of life, and school's one component of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, the piece that I'm wanting to pull out a little more and hear more from you about is, you said it's a chance to deepen our engagement in life, in society.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
It's where, you know, we don't choose who else is going to school. Right?
Yeah.
There's a raw, authentic nature to that.
Mm-hmm.
That seems really important to participating in society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's where it's our opportunity to be a part of a more diverse community
mm-hmm.
than we would have in our own, you know, our family life or where we happen to live in Petaluma or, you know, and even in our professional lives, right? So it gives us access to a more diverse community with different people from different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to do the fun, challenging work of, you know, getting along with people,
mm-hmm.
having challenges happen at school and help being a part of, working that out, or having, you know, a disruptive kid in the classroom. And even though it's not your kid, what's your role as a parent? So putting into practice, what it means to not just raise your child, but be a part of creating the conditions for all children
mm-hmm.
to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in your many years of work, in the education world, you have had this big picture lens mm-hmm. where you look through. You don't just look at your children. You look at, kids mm-hmm. overall and how we're being with that. And
yeah, I would say that's always where I start. I have a deep trust in my ability to be present for my children and meet their needs. So I don't spend as much energy thinking about what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of a flow.
Mm-hmm.
I think where my planning and, you know, like choices come from, like the decisions that I need to make, or the strategy as a parent is more of comes from a larger lens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, the challenging things that happen at school, like working with what happens at school, what shows up at school
right.
with your children, right?
Yes.
So say we drive up to a gas station and we're with our kids and somebody's at the gas station vomiting in the trash can, you know, say mm-hmm. that happens. That's something in life that we may or may not experience, but if we do, we can deal with it lots of different ways, right?
Exactly.
Based on our values and many other things. So you mentioned the challenging things that show up at school. What do you find, just maybe two or three examples of things that are challenging, dynamics at school mm-hmm. that you feel compelled to work with
absolutely.
With your children. Yeah.
So can I speak to an example that I know we've talked about in the past?
Please.
Okay. Yeah. So last year when we were in San Francisco, and the diversity of public schools in San Francisco is beautiful. they're also more under-resourced schools. So, you know, you've got a lunch period where teachers need a break and they end up turning on the TV to watch a program for 20 minutes during a, I don't know, 30-minute lunch period, right? So we happen to not have screens in our home. We very much limit the use of screens. So, and I know they're going to be exposed to things that aren't aligned with our values at home, right? But even navigating that is kind of what we're up for. So Wendy, she was in kindergarten at the time, comes home. It's a hectic environment that she doesn't feel good to her. And she's able to express that to us because we didn't even know this was happening until she explained what happens on Fridays during lunch. And, you know, and she doesn't like it. I can tell. I mean, in her own words, she's saying, you know, I don't have enough time to eat. They have an option to go play, but there's so much social pressure to, no one else is doing that. So she wants to stay. And so, we did two things. One, talk to other parents about who else, because we just have the assumption that other parents aren't super stoked about this. And we find that out and also have, you know, communicate with the principal, and it's clear that this decision was made very intentionally through a long process. So shifting the process is going to take time. What immediately can we do that's empowering to Wendy is we encouraged her to create an opportunity with her friends. Like say, I mean, I guess we kind of bribed her, to be honest. We said, you can bring some fruit snacks and share fruit snacks with anyone who wants to come play instead of watch the show, because she's aware of other children who also don't want to watch the show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even that, like, so here's we just look at what are the challenging opportunities, challenges at school, and how is it an opportunity to empower them to speak up for themselves, to practice social emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. by seeing what they're, being aware of what their peers' needs are, what their feelings are. Mm-hmm.
And I love that so let me just make sure I heard you and kind of capture the story mm-hmm. a little bit. So Wendy movies were being watched during lunch on one day of the week. She didn't like that. You were supporting her to come up with a way to lead, to use her voice, to shift it by having a compelling offer. Mm-hmm. Hey, kids who also don't want to watch, want to come have some fruit. It wasn't chocolate, which all good, whatever mm-hmm. people choose to, you know, is fine. But you were giving them a healthy option mm-hmm. to draw other kids to be with her and use her voice. Mm-hmm. How did she respond to that?
She did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she problem solved, and it was empowering to, you know, Fridays weren't something she dreaded anymore.
Oh my goodness. And she succeeded. She got friends to play.
Exactly.
Holy moly. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah. It's a simple, it's always that simple.
Yeah. 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 To break it down and tell her what she's capable of. And what did you notice in her when that experience was over? Did she seem proud of what she'd done?
Of course.
Yeah.
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 And mostly, I think, maybe more so than proud, it's just a release of anxiety.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a mm-hmm. lightness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I also noticed, you know, that the other parents of the children who also didn't want to watch the show, it was an opportunity to talk to them about a different strategy that uh-huh. they can all have.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you get to build community, and parents go from complaining about something uh-huh. to have an agency mm-hmm. around how you can create a different option
mm-hmm. yeah.
when the condition hasn't changed.
Yeah.
So.
And that's another big piece there, right? Big lesson. Mm-hmm. The way my coach puts it, I love it. He says, you can sit in the movie critic seat, or you can sit in the movie director seat.
Mm-hmm.
You can complain about, I don't want to watch a movie. And sadly, the reality is probably there are kids who don't want to, but they're still going to do it because mm-hmm. maybe their parent hasn't reached the place that you have with seeing what's possible and encouraging the kids. But you helped her move from movie critic to movie director. Mm-hmm. And that's every day of our lives. Yeah. We have those opportunities. Yeah. So thank you for sharing about that. Are there any other sort of stories or examples you can think of that where something has arisen at school
mm-hmm.
and you've used your communication, emotional intelligence, your parenting, your being to support?
For sure. Yeah. So recently, our youngest, 3 and a half at preschool. Does it still count preschool?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. has been picked on by another one of the students. And he happens to be a very, you know, very small 3.5-year-old. Mm. And the teachers were very, you know, they're very transparent, and they told us what was going on. And they wanted to potentially take that other kid out of school and really get to the bottom of it. And I also saw this as like, hey, this is an opportunity to, one, empower Leo to seek help from an adult. To, we always talk about how when it's hard to be kind. Like we need to practice being kind, mm-hmm. and you need to be loved in order to be kind. And you just have to keep working at it. So it's not very, and very often we make mistakes. And so we forget, or we make the wrong choice. And that we can learn to be kind from each other. Mm-hmm. So that his role, in addition to seeking adult support and speaking up for himself, is also to practice kindness, mm-hmm. and to, mm-hmm. we use the term loving someone into kindness.
Loving someone into kindness.
Kindness, yes. Yes. And so, you know, that looks like maybe we have this person over for a play date, or just really getting them beyond just standing up for yourself, mm-hmm. into shifting the dynamic, mm-hmm. right? That's really what our goal is as parents. Mm-hmm. And then also me practicing that with the parent and reaching out to the parent and talking about how committed I am to their child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so
that's just outrageously wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it is. It is. If we had a world where people would choose to see somebody in pain, see somebody who's being a real jerk, and there's plenty of that, mm-hmm. and to actually love them, to actually lean in, the pain would...
And then the fear goes away, right? Like, I don't have fear that he's going to be beat up at school. Yeah, maybe he gets his eye poked with a fork without any damage. But, you know, like, but that's one instance. It's not going to happen all the time. And to be able to be empowered, to not live in fear, and mm-hmm. to not have your kindness be conditional, mm-hmm. is really a life skill that we're really invested in, mm-hmm. cultivating. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. So you clearly have, and I'm sure listeners, you can hear this in Kristen's sharing, you have some experience to bring to the table here. You've got, I don't know your full background, but mm-hmm. you've got skills here that are advanced, that you're bringing to the table with your children. Not everyone has that to turn to. Mm-hmm. So if you think of, say, the average mom, you know, just somebody who is a lovely mother and is doing her best, to, you know, support her children and wants to learn and grow. And what would you say to somebody who, you know, like that, who hasn't done leadership development through starting organizations and learning it from your parents, or, you know, mm-hmm. what's the simple, you know, you make breakfast for your child, you're bringing them to school. What's one little thing? How could you break down some of this work you're doing?
I hadn't thought about that.
You're in unconscious competency. You're out of the, you're off the charts in some ways in this place, right? But what's a breakdown of a simple?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe you could help me with this,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but there's a component of it that is, not coming from leaning into light, not coming from fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So break that down. What do you mean? Like, yeah, in terms of your
parenting?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be specific or helpful, but here's what comes to mind.
Great.
I often, as mothers, I think about the distinction between worrying, mm-hmm. and intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a culture of worrying, mm-hmm. coming from fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's so pervasive that it is a, it's almost a metric for our, you know, the extent to which we love as parents, mm-hmm. right? Like if we're not sufficiently worrying, we are not sufficiently responsible, nurturing mothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's how strong I think the culture is.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't have magazines, but when I go and pick one up.
mm-hmm.
And so I think worrying gets in the way of really trusting our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can see clearly, right? But our intuition is what gives us power, because that's when we can, you know, ferociously fight like a bear to protect our child when we need to, but not instigate or activate that unless it's really necessary. Mm-hmm. And so often we're on the edge of that, like we're bringing that energy. And I just think it takes away the simplicity and the clarity of what it means to parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Fear is foggy.
Yeah,
fear
foggy.
Is not a clear energy. So you broke it down to basically, I love how this happens. The essential, you broke it down to the essential. There's love and there's fear. They can't coexist in the same moment. Love is the most powerful force in the universe. You're saying you're as best as you can choosing to come from love in your parenting. Mm-hmm. So I just want to I want to keep breaking this down till we can give listeners one thing. So they're driving their child to school or they're riding their bike. No, it's beautiful. We're taking big picture stuff and we're breaking it down.
Great.
So if you're listening and you're, you know, imagining yourself taking your child to school tomorrow, and you want to come from love in life because you want to create a world that's more loving and less fearful, and you worry sometimes, because we all do. Worrying's not the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. We worry for good reasons sometimes. How can you shift in that moment from worry into love? No, it's just, it's a decision, right?
It's a decision.
That could be one big thing you do on the way to school, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even that internal conversation
is
that noticing is big.
Is big.
Right? It's mindfulness.
Yeah.
I also think, so when I think about what are the mantras that I have for myself, and maybe this is practical, I think my kid, all kids. Right. So when I shift the focus to, okay, it's not just about what's happening to my kid right now. Mm-hmm. It's what's happening for all of these kids. Mm-hmm. That also expands me in my capacity to show up because it's a part of taking myself outside of myself because our kids are so personal. So I do think that that's a tangible, practice, just a mantra for yourself.
And what does it do for you when you say, my kid, all kids, when you take it to that big picture, which you live that, that's just what you, that's how you see things. What does that do? How does that shift how you show up?
I just think it makes me more creative because I'm not operating from fear because I'm not worried about protecting my own kid. Now I'm like, oh, how are we going to take care of all of these kids? And immediately, you're just put in a larger space of creativity and concern. So I guess I think a specific example that most people can relate to and probably have practiced this, and I've seen it beautifully demonstrated on the playground, would be, you know, you're on a playground, kids are playing, something happens to your kid. You know, is your instinct to first go protect your kid or go see what's happening in the situation, you know, involve everyone and kind of facilitate the group of children, not for the sake of just protecting your own child, but for the sake of all of the children, right? Like that would be a tangible, specific example.
Yeah. So stepping in and saying, hey, let's all check in about this.
Yeah.
And working it out as a group.
Right.
Rather than isolating.
Right. Because then you're also modeling what you need to be modeling for your child. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to those parents who, you know, if you're listening and you hear this and Kristen says, okay, you just, you know, my kid, all kids, you make that shift in your mind and you're on the playground and a kid hits your kid or, you know, somebody bumps into somebody on the swing and it's awful or whatever it is. And you think, oh God, stepping in, that scares me. I don't know that I can do that. You know, one thing that you can do, that I've used and I often forget to is just asking the children how, Tommy, you just got kicked really hard by the swing and that hurt. Oh my gosh. What can we do? Who has an idea? Let's raise hands because there's lots of us here, but who has an idea about what we can do to make this good? Mm-hmm. So we're not walking away feeling angry or sad, right? Just basic.
Basic.
Yeah.
But even coming into that situation with that question is an all kid approach.
It is an all kid approach, right?
Like you're not blaming anyone. You're saying,
what can we do
as a group?
Yeah.
And you're giving them all the opportunity to participate.
Yeah.
And to, and to be respected and to co-lead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. So just going back to some of what you're saying. So transitioning from fear to love, my kid to all kids, working together with them, jumping in and addressing it as a group, mm-hmm. a community. Mm-hmm. We're going to work on this together. Yeah.
Beautiful. And I also think it's, you know, parenting, right? Like I have a passion around empowering other mothers. And so, you know, it's my kid, all kid, but it's also me, other moms, you know, like not comparing myself and celebrating what their contribution is and loving their children so that they feel like their child is loved, mm-hmm. because that's all we want as parents.
Yeah.
Is to know that their fabric of support is wide and, you know, structurally sound,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes to that.
And to me that all relates to school. Uh-huh. It's a place where all of that can be practiced. Mm-hmm. And I can't run away from it. Mm-hmm. So I actually have to practice it. And sometimes I like putting myself in those situations.
Yeah. To practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Be there and show up. Yeah. And I just want to share too about, this kind of fine line between worry and just some, I don't even have the words here, so I don't know where they come from, but they'll come. You know, sometimes people think that you're worrying when you're actually just paying attention to something and you notice, huh, there's something that's bothering me here. Mm-hmm. And people might say, you know, Ja love, no. It's just like, chill out,
oh,
Jessica.
Right. Yeah.
You know, relax, you're worrying. When it's actually like, no, my attention is picking up something that's not sitting right. I'm not worrying. I want to address this.
Right.
So there's a place where
that's taking action.
Yeah. Yeah. That's taking action. That's moving from worry to, you know, from there's a bully at school bothering my little boy. Mm-hmm. I'm worried. I'm afraid for his safety. I'm concerned. I feel, all right, let's step out of worry and into how can I be with this? How can I bring love to this situation and empower my child mm-hmm. in school? And gosh, there are opportunities every day, right?
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do your kids, you know, how do you find out? I'm thinking of the mothers on the, you know, who are listening today. How do you know that something's going on at school that's mm-hmm. not working for them? Do they bring it up? Do you probe them for what was happening during the day? Does it show up through play?
That's a great question. Because I feel like there's a lot that I think I trust that they'll tell me mm-hmm. if something's really wrong. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to get them to talk about school. Mm-hmm. And they'll talk to Joe more than they will me. That's my husband.
Their dad.
Mm-hmm.
What is he doing that's attracting that? Is he playing?
I think he's just not their mom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I've also noticed that when there is something that really needs to be addressed, they are bringing it up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They bring it up.
Mm-hmm. And that's a reflection of your sense of trust in them.
Yeah.
It's going to come up if it needs to come up.
Yeah. Yeah. So probing them it turns them off.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's universal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's when you're three.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be probed.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
And it's said by a few sort of parenting, you know, authors that I enjoy, that when we just have spaciousness and play, mm-hmm. that's the way that children feel inclined to bring something up,
right?
It's just, it'll just pop out and suddenly, oh,
right.
You know, we can be with it.
Spending time at night before bed, reading books and being together. And
Yeah. So for all the mamas listening who, and papas who, you know, have your kids in school, I just trust that you're taking something from this about how you can hold your children as whole beings from a place of trust, from a place of love, and show up to empower their leadership, their voice, their sense of being a creator in this world. And I'm so grateful to you for your sharing and what you embody with your children, for all children. And I want to ask Kristen one final question. What are some resources? Do you know of any books, speakers, or organizations? You work with organizations who also work on education and making schools a better place for children. What are some of the organizations you could share with our listeners?
Yeah, so there are just a beautiful amount of organizations that are working in the school system to increase the vibrancy and the whole child approach to education. So I'll just list a few, but also if you go to the website, our website, crew2030.org, we have a list of organizations that we work with. All of them are working in the school
system. Okay, let's share that again to make sure listeners heard. If you go to crew, crew2030.org, you'll find a list of resources, organizations.
Yeah, and actually I'll leave it to that.
Okay.
Great. And then I will say for parenting, these books, I think they're based in Waldorf Education.
She's reaching behind her to grab
your,
a book.
Your
8-year-old.
Yeah. So they have your 2-year-old, your 3-year-old, your 4-year-old, your 5-year-old, your 6-year-old, on and on.
Yeah. So just developmental books to talk about the age and the phase your child's at. And the author of this one is Louise Bates Ames, PhD, and Carol Chase Haber, MA.
And wait, one more, sorry. The Tao of Parenting.
The Tao of Parenting. Oh.
Have you read that? Oh, it's just a bedside book. You could read the whole thing in the night, but just picking it up and reading, you know, a page is very nourishing.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And I hear the sweet voice of your little Leo.
Perfect timing.
Coming on in. Yeah. This is the first time I've done it in person where we're sitting here together talking. So what a delight to be with you, Kristen. Thank you so much for your work.
And it's a delight to be with you.
Yeah.
Thank you, dear friend.
So welcome. So listeners, thank you so much for being with us today, for having the heart, the soul to love your children as best as you can. That the leverage that has to make our world a more loving place is profound and indescribable. So thank you. And if you have enjoyed this conversation today and you know somebody else who's got kids in school and might want to up their game in terms of how they're showing up to support their kids, and can't we all use that? Please share this with them. Share the link to this conversation. And these are monthly. These interviews happen all on my blog, which is leaningintolight.com, and the conversations page. And we're not on social media, so please sign up for our newsletter if you want to learn about these. And thanks again for being here and being you, and we'll look forward to being in touch with you next time. Thanks for listening.